All right, let's be real. What has been the hardest thing about your pregnancy and postpartum journey? Is it the postpartum painful sex that nobody talks about? What are you supposed to do with that? Is it the fact that you might have torn during delivery and you have no idea how to heal now that you're in postpartum? Welcome to the Onas Podcast, where we bring on mothers, parents, and pregnant postpartum individuals to talk about their journey and their experiences to give that knowledge back to people that need it. And we are also attached to theonascollaborative.com, which is a free online educational directory where we help moms and parents connect to maternity care providers in their local area. We are here to give the power back to you guys so you have a choice in your journey. We'll have space for midwives, doulas, pelvic floor PTs, massage therapists. And as we continue expanding, we hope that we can support you. All right, we hope you enjoy this podcast. Hello, welcome back. My name is Erin and I am the host and the founder of the Onas Collaborative. This week we have an exciting episode with another brown person in Australia. So her name is Attel. She's originally from Canada, but living in Adelaide with her husband and her two daughters. So Attel is actually coming on and we're going to be talking about a few of the differences we've noticed of being, you know, black from North America to living in Australia, but also her experience birthing in the Australian system and what type of things arose being a brown body and what she also noticed amongst other brown birthers in Australia. So we hope you enjoy this episode.
Yeah. When I came here 2 years ago, I'd be walking at a shopping center, like compared to where I was, where I would see a black person maybe once a month or so. Here I was seeing them every day. Like my street is like at least 10 to 20 houses. Even my neighbor is black. When I first came in, two of my neighbors, which I thought was just amazing. Like it made me so happy. Yeah. But then guess what? They don't say hi anymore. No one.
That's
so when I was walking at, I know when I would go to the shopping center, I would see black people, I would just like, you know, smile. And it's either they look at me and look away, or it's just like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, I did that the first 2 months or 3 months. I was like, all right, Attel, you need to chill. Because especially coming from North America, for me, it's like, oh, there's a lot of black people. I love this.
Yeah.
And then I got really excited to see something similar to what I was coming from. But then I felt I was the only one trying to be friendly, or maybe I was overly friendly. So I stopped that. But now I don't. Yeah. No one really does that anymore, unfortunately. But I wish we could all do that. Have that, you know, togetherness. Show that love for each other, because I think it would make our presence here a lot better and stronger. But yeah, what do you do? So when I came 2010, Adelaide was so small, the minorities, black people to be precise, that I went clubbing one night and then some guy came up to me and I remember seeing him. He's like, oh, I saw you in the city at the shopping center last week.
You're the only black person here.
Like, you know, because there isn't too many of you walking around the streets. Like, so that's how amazing it was. And I love things like that. It could have been a line, but it wasn't, because I did have I remember seeing that kind of face. But obviously I didn't pay attention, but as much. But yeah, now it's just so different. But I really love the diversity. They have a lot of Asians here. Indians, people from Southeast Asia, yeah, quite a few here, which is really nice, and it's growing. I know Toronto, excuse me, Toronto, where I was from, obviously we say it's a melting pot, pot of culture. I feel like Adelaide is getting there. The more the population increases, the more the diversity, which would be great. Hopefully, in terms of violence that doesn't, you know, arise. I'm not sure if you heard of the news, because I don't think you were here then, with the kids in Melbourne, where they're labeling them, saying they cause violence. It's just kids hanging out, just like anywhere else. Like, white kids hang out. It's okay at the mall. Shopping center. But then here, black kids hang out in groups, it's a problem. Like some people will call the cops, like, just let kids be, just let them have fun. Like, things like that make me so angry. But here where I am, you can see a group of black kids hang out and it's okay, because obviously it's just us. You can kill yourself, so do whatever you want. That's what they would assume, right? But none of that happens. There's no violence or anything, right? So I hope that really continues here in Adelaide. But I do really hope we could be a lot more friendly with each other.
Yeah.
It's not like we're unfriendly, but it's just, you know, that feeling of, wow, it's someone like me. It's no longer there, which is good in a way. That means, you know, we're really, we have our own communities that we can attach ourselves to now rather than just you from your country.
Yeah, because I would say when I first started abroad, I was in Sydney. So I don't think it happened. I don't think I saw that many Black people where I was. I was in
Coogee. Oh, in Sydney.
Because I was in Coogee. Apparently there's pockets. That's what people told me. They said there's pockets of where you can find Black people. I don't know where those pockets are, though. But my partner's originally from Newcastle. And anytime I was in Newcastle, it's super rare to see a Black person. And, like, we would always take out the time to smile at each other and be like, hi. And even, I would say Canberra's really diverse because of it's the political capital. So you have a lot of people in the embassy. So it's really, really diverse. But I would say, yeah, so I would still say that 100% of the time I see a Black person, we at least take out the time to acknowledge each other. Like, it's rare if someone doesn't. But the part that always makes me sad is they're like, oh, like, where are you from? And I'm like, yeah, I'm from America. And they're like, yeah, but where are you from? And I was like, oh no. Like, I wish I knew my history, but I don't. Like, I don't think
any Black people ask you that.
Yeah, because they'll want to be like, what's your ancestry? Like, where is your like African background? I'm like, I don't know, because most African Americans don't know. Mm. Yeah, like, I'll never learn.
No, that's, I guess I wanted to say shocking, but it's so common. Isn't it like that in America? Because in Canada, it's the exact same story. Where are you really from? Where are you originally from? I just tell them I was born in Canada, even though I wasn't, just to stop the whole, you know, I went when I was a child. Yes, I'm African, but I just told you where I'm from. If I decide to identify as Canadian, then call me Canadian. If I decide, you know, I'm Nigerian, sometimes I'll say Nigerian Canadian. But then some people, I'm just like, yeah, I don't want, you know, questions. I don't want to have a conversation about this. I'm Canadian.
Yeah.
To make it easier these days, I just tell people here I'm Nigerian, then they won't ask any further questions like, oh, you're African. So it's not like that in America where people would ask you, where are you really from?
No, if you're part of the Black population, I never got that. I think because they just assume like you're African American. And then, but I would say if you have like a Latina look to you or like a Hispanic look to you, they would definitely ask. But I've never gotten that question in America.
Oh, really? Oh, no, in Canada, it was so common, especially when I was Black and had an accent, obviously, because I had just came from Nigeria, which I still have an accent, but maybe not as deep. But people would always ask, because a lot of the Black people in Canada are often Jamaican. So in terms of the language, integrated into the Canadian, I guess, accent. Here it's different. Yeah, it's almost opposite. So I don't know if you find this here, where if you go somewhere to any of the mainstream services, they try to say, speak to you like you don't speak English.
Oh, yeah.
They assume every Black person doesn't speak English. I have like stories, but there's one recent one I would love to share. But has it happened to you recently or at all?
I would say people do come off first, like if I haven't spoken yet, they'll be like, oh, she probably doesn't speak English. But then once I like introduce myself, they automatically hear the American accent and then they carry on with it. But I've even had people, this annoyed me so much. Like, granted, he was from the Middle East, like I try to give him slack. Like, I was in an Uber and he was just like, we were just talking. He's like, yeah, where are you from? I was like, oh, the US. And he was like, oh, okay, where's that in Africa? Oh my god.
You're kidding. Why don't we him probably doesn't know anything about you?
Where's that in Africa?
What? Because he wasn't listening.
He wasn't listening. He just assumed. Oh, wow. I was like, oh my gosh, people.
Because America has a lot of presence in a lot of Middle Eastern countries.
I know. Maybe people usually don't say the U.S. I don't know what people say, but
no, like everybody knows U.S., USA, America, whatever, all the same.
Yeah.
Tomatoes, we all know. Like, oh my gosh, that's shocking.
No, but the one thing I have noticed is in the US, people that are from Africa typically don't like African Americans. With my experience, people that I've met from Africa typically look at us as privileged and don't like to intermingle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like I've been called racist by people from African countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, I'm racist. They're like, yeah, because you're African American. You're not real African. I was like, I have never heard this before. Like, what is this? Yeah.
That is so shocking.
Yeah. In the US, we don't really mix because they don't consider us true African. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what was your story?
No, for me, I haven't had that experience, obviously, because I'm African. But I know for a lot of our parents, first generation wouldn't have that issue, but a lot of our parents are more, yes, Jamaicans. Well, they assume, okay, following that path as well. A lot of Black Americans or Black Canadians who are not Africans are Jamaicans. And they just assume they're no good. They don't like education. They don't like getting ahead in life. They're useless for most part. So yes, they wouldn't necessarily say, oh, I'd love to be friends with someone from that culture or that background. And for us as kids, it's a bit tough as well, because obviously you want to be friends with everyone, especially when you're new, when you're young, even when you get older. But then your parents will tell you, no, you can't be friends with that person because they automatically assume you're Black Canadian. You might have a gun or something, or
really? Some
things like that. Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. But unfortunately, obviously that's really sad, but that's not the truth. Yeah, so I know people do experience that. People do say things like that. In terms of the racist, I hadn't heard that. But I know growing up there and going to school in Canada, I wouldn't say racist for sure. I know a lot of the Black kids who weren't African or who didn't have the accent, even people, let's say you came from Barbados or Grenada, because I had a friend from Grenada, their accents was very different, but they were more accepted into the Black community at the schools that I went to.
Hmm.
Again, I love moving around. I went to like four high schools, three universities, technically four.
The same way. I went to three high schools and three universities, so it's fine.
Yeah, see? Yeah. So I guess that's why here we are now. The rest of the conversation. And guess what? We live in Australia, from North America.
Yeah.
Anyways, what is it called? No, I forgot my train of thought. No, so when I went to high school, obviously I had the African accent. People weren't as easily accepting of me. That African girl. And yeah, they make jokes, but then all the other Black kids are more accepting of the girl who came from Grenada. And she had a very thick accent too. But I didn't see that as racist. It's not a race thing. I don't think we're all the same.
Yeah.
But maybe some sort of discrimination based on...
It wouldn't be a racist thing because
I think discrimination of some sort, definitely. I don't know if language is a thing, but accent discrimination, I'm sure there's a word for it. So I experienced that a lot in high school, but outside of high school, obviously when I went to university, there were the Black kids became minorities, because when I was in high school, I went to a predominantly Black high school, which I thought was amazing. Well, the first high school I went to, but then as I moved around, the cohort changed to people from Middle East, and then the last one I went to was more white kids, where kids were having cars. Like, I'm in a classroom with someone's like, oh, my parents just bought me a brand new car. I'm like, a kid's allowed to drive?
Yeah.
Mind you, I was 20. No, kids are alive. Like, how are they getting cars? So I was in a more, I guess, wealthier neighborhood or school, or I don't know, it was weird. But yeah, so it all changed. And of course, those group wouldn't accept you either, because you don't even know that. You have to have a license at 20, even though obviously your parents don't tell you, you're new to the place, you don't really, you know. And then back then, internet wasn't a thing to do research and be as aware of what's happening in society or what your rights are at the end of the day, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah. But I do find, yeah, that a lot of parents will think that way. And obviously, I was listening to a video yesterday. I'm not sure if you've seen it, by American celebrities, all male, like Jay-Z, Chris Rock, etc., where they were saying, no, I'll forward it to you on Owners Collective. Where the Black people, well, not Black people, so during slavery times, obviously, we're like, oh, slavery is no longer there. But then just like our parents raised us, they raised us the way they were raised by their parents. Mostly we're raising our kids the way we're raised by our parents. So that slavery still, you know, exists somehow. And what was amazing to me that he said is our kids go to school that their teachers are kids of slave masters. So they still treat our kids in schools the way they saw their parents treated us. And I'm like, wow, it makes sense. It's like, you can't erase this really, because you're thinking, oh, we've changed 21st century, we're more progressive.
No.
But that ideology of what we learned from our family, you know, passed down history on, it's still there.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought of that. So he's like, it's still the, what is it called? White supremacist or white culture or white slave masters. It's still them raising our kids.
Yeah.
Yes, we're trying to move away from the way our parents did it, but a lot of them, because a lot of them still have that belief, which I think has really progressed a lot, unfortunately, with the previous administration, then that's still what's happening to our kids. And I hear with home teaching these days, homeschooling, a lot of parents online on Instagram are complaining, like, why is the teacher acting this way towards my child? Or I was listening, this is, you know, they're bullying my child. And this is a teacher who's supposed to be the protector, but obviously, you know, they're doing opposite of that. Yeah, so I didn't think of it in that context, but yeah, now I don't remember why I brought that example, but I definitely think it's related.
No, it is. I'll send you a video. So they've done, a lot of the people in the Black community have done a lot of research into intergenerational trauma. And essentially how all of that trauma has been passed down, one, behaviorally by the way that we're raised, but also genetically, because they haven't done research on African Americans, which isn't surprising, but they've done research on, say, like people who were Jewish in the Holocaust, and they found that there was actually a genetic change because of the amount of stress that they were on. Mm-hmm. So they're saying the amount of stress that people who had to experience slavery, imagine that going on, that went on for decades. And so it's like, how has that changed our genetic makeup as African Americans as well? So I'll just send you that video.
Please do. It's such important research, but I feel like we're always at the bottom of everything. Anyways, I won't go into all these stories upon stories. It's just like, why? Like, even with birthing, I think we discussed this. It's like, there's research being done on other groups, but why not us to find out more about our body? At least I'm speaking here in Australia, and I think it's probably very similar, maybe in the US.
Yeah.
I know Canada it is. The doctors here have no idea anything about the Black body, and honestly, I feel like they could care less either, right? But hence why they're not, you know, making the move to say, let's conduct more research, or, you know. But it's so disheartening.
Australia is crap at getting research. Like, I can't even, like, I was trying to research Aboriginal maternal mortality rates. Like, I was just like, at least give me that. They have been here since the beginning. There is no, they're like, oh, it's higher. Okay, it's higher. Give me a stat. Do the research. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, they just say it's higher. Yeah, that's what they say. Well, they just, and guess what? Sometimes maybe it's not. You're just making up stories. I'm sure it is.
Exactly.
But like, it's just, you know, but you haven't done any, you don't have any proof, any facts to say, oh, this is why it's this way. You're just guessing.
Yeah.
It could be that one community that you lived in, just like I live here, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of diversity. I haven't lived in Canberra, but I'm assuming there isn't that much diversity there, but you're saying there is because you have. So here, it's like with something like that, maternal birth or a death rate, if different regions will be different results.
Yeah, there would be.
Yeah, different regions, different groups. I know there's a bit of research done on, I think, Asian women. There's another group as well, but yeah, not us, not Aboriginals.
So how about you start off telling us a bit about your pregnancy and birth experience that you've had here in Australia?
Mm-hmm. I have two kids. Obviously, have had both of them here. The first one, it went really well. I didn't have any health complications. I gave birth at a reputable hospital, at least so everyone says, because obviously they do the zoning, the catchment area, and that was our catchment. It was fine. Again, I was only going to the hospital once a month, which I think is the usual requirement. But then after that, 3 years later, had my second one. The process for the second one, totally different. Again, I don't know if this is because I live in the north now, where they have a lot of minorities. So the hospital, obviously, in the catchment area, there's a lot of us going there. And just from the get-go, they said, I have thyroid. That's something apparently a lot of women, after they give birth, they could develop that. But I developed it after my first one. And they did say either it goes away after a few months, or it could stay to the second one and then goes away after the second one, which mine hasn't. It persists till today. So when I would go into the hospital for appointments, I feel like they weren't necessarily as nice. Mm-hmm. But then what was really a waking moment for me was when I believe I was 32 weeks. I went into the hospital. I said, oh, I wasn't hearing the baby, no movement all day. And they did tests, they check everything. They said, oh, the baby, everything seems fine, but it's not meeting the requirements in terms of the breathing. We'll keep you in. I said, fine. They kept me in. And then middle of the night, a doctor came. They said my results were progressing as they would do the checks, blood check the baby. Everything was getting better. But for some weird reason, a doctor came to me, I think right before around 10 or 11 p.m. and said, oh, we need to do an emergency C-section. I was like, why? Because the baby's moving, but we're not sure what's going to happen next. We need to give you steroids.
What?
I was like, this is all, I don't even know what this means. Like, C-section from nowhere. It's not like I'm having any complications. You're telling me things are okay, but then you're going against what the results are showing. You want to do a C-section, you want to give me steroids. They're like, oh, we could give you steroids and then wait till maybe a few hours, then you could we could do a C-section, we'll see how things go, or we could just take you in 30 minutes. I was like, okay, I need to speak with my partner. Obviously, I was like, I'm fine, I feel fine. That's the thing with at least with me, I often trust my intuition. I just trust my guts. Like, I'm like, I feel okay. Obviously, if you're having issues as a woman, please do as told, right? You want to follow what your health practitioner is saying, because they know more about what they're doing than us who don't necessarily have the background, I feel. But for me, I feel fine. The baby's kicking now. I literally could feel every bit of it. And I don't feel, you know, like anything is wrong. Why are they forcing me to do a C-section? And I am aware, I don't know about Australia, but I know in Canada, but not sure how it is with other parts of the world in America, when doctors do C-sections, apparently they get paid more.
Yeah, they get paid more in the US as well. Yeah.
And what?
In the US, they get paid more as well.
Oh, yeah. So obviously I know they tend to push that. And with here, where a lot of the women... a lot of the African moms, they're migrants, they come in as refugees. Some of them are not educated.
Yeah.
So whatever you tell them, they would often go, oh, okay. And I just feel often it's because they don't understand English per se, and they may not have an interpreter present at that moment. What interpreter are you going to call right before midnight or after midnight to say interpret for me, you know? And you don't want, a lot of them, they're scared to argue. It's like, no, this is authority, this is the system, this is how it's going to be. But for me, I think it's been such a positive that I grew up in Canada, so I'm aware of my rights. Obviously, I know if I do defy their decision, I say, no, I won't do this, and anything happens, it's all on my head, which is okay. I'm happy to take that burden, but I strongly believed that that was in the case. So I rang my partner. This is what they're saying. He's like, well, tell them you want to wait. So I told him, yeah, I would wait till morning and see how things progress. Then we can decide if we want to do a C-section, if I should take steroids. And then they said, okay. But then the lady came back again. Cause she said in 30 minutes, she came back. I'm like, well, I still haven't spoken to my mom. I had a friend that I wanted to speak with who, she's from the US actually, who said when she was going through her system, they just kept forcing her C-section. She's like, no, I think she had preeclampsia. She had all these other health issues.
Is that in the US? Or Australia?
No, this is here in Australia, but she's from the US. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing. I feel like those of us who grew up in the Western world, I think she was born in the US though. We just have a bit more confidence because we know how to approach the system a bit more. Compared to those who may not even have that access, not be aware of what's happening, not necessarily they don't have the knowledge, because a lot of all these, I'm speaking specifically for most African women coming from Africa as refugees, they're aware, they have kids, they know how the body works, but obviously they don't want to go against what the educational system, the doctors who went to school for years are telling them.
Yeah.
Even though they'll be aware of how, I know I'm okay. But anyways, the lady was saying from the US that gave birth here, she has two kids as well. Like, they kept forcing her. She's like, no, unless it's life and death.
Yeah.
No one should take me out of this room and take me to C-section. And which, in life and death, there's 5 minutes window you can drag me there, And guess what? She had both of her babies naturally. It doesn't matter if you had it naturally or not, but my point is, don't force what's not there. Let things go with nature naturally. Yeah. Don't go against nature, just because I'll get, I don't know how many few bucks more, like C-section. Like, so she was actually my, she gave me the courage. See, that's why it's good to share the stories, because she spoke to me when I met her randomly online. I was looking for mom friends. We were just chatting, and then she shared her story. And then obviously when I was at the hospital experiencing something similar, a different hospital, different doctors, I'm sure, she came to my mind and I actually called her. I think it was past 11 at this point. I spoke with my partner. I'm like, I remember she's been through this. I rang her. Her and her husband were on the phone trying to encourage me, stay calm. But yeah, do what you think is best. Obviously, if you feel you need to do this, do it, but really try and push it as long as you can, as long as you know you and the baby are okay, you don't feel like something is wrong.
Yeah.
And I did. And then after that, I spoke to my mom and same thing. But then the doctor came back again an hour and a half later. So are you ready? I'm like, no, I'm not ready. I'm not going to do this. She's like, well, if anything happens, it would be on you.
Oh my God.
I was shocked at the things that she was saying. It's like, but I don't want to do this. And for me, I'm the kind of person, I need reasons. I know a lot of people are like that, but some people, it doesn't matter. You need to give me facts to say, this is why I'm doing this. But she couldn't justify why she was telling me to have a C-section or take steroids, because the results are showing, different nurses were coming in the room telling me that, the baby's fine, everything is okay. I'm assuming maybe it doesn't meet that minimum standard that they have, but our bodies are different. Yeah. People are different. I shouldn't always have to tick a box for you to feel like I'm okay or I'm not okay. Yeah. But anyways, long story short, I went against the doctor, and then 2.5 hours she came back. I was like, yep, I'm not doing this. I'm sorry. And then she left. She's like, okay, all right. I didn't know she was going to speak to her seniors. And then she came back, I believe 30 minutes or an hour later. This was around 3 a.m. Or 4 a.m. She's like, well, I spoke to my seniors and they said you don't need to do a C-section. And since you don't want to take steroids, it's okay.
Why?
I know. I'm like, so you were just saying you have a senior, you were just making up stories to say you need to do this, but you don't even know what's happening.
That's ridiculous.
So imagine I didn't actually say, no, I don't want to do this. within 30 minutes or an hour, because she's like, oh, we need time to prepare the room, surgery room, or whatever they call it. I would have, at that stage, at 3-4 a.m. they would have done the surgery already, just because someone thought, oh, let me just tell her this and she would fall for it. I'm like, you are, oh, I was upset when she came back. I just said, okay, thank you, because I didn't want to get angry, because then she has that angry person, and who knows what they'll do, and then you might upset your baby inside. I was like, so I could have done something that could have been avoided. Anyways, overall, I'm really happy that I avoided it. I stood on my ground and said, no, I'm not doing this. And glad her senior, who obviously knew how to read the results, said, no, you don't have to. I did put in a complaint, by the way. So today, didn't hear from them. I feel like the health system here is horrible. It's crap. I went to the doctor about 3 weeks ago, had an incident with a doctor, put in a complaint, till today didn't hear from them. Went to the doctor's last on, I wasn't well, I think during the week, last week, yeah, Friday. And I said, I put in a complaint 2 weeks ago. I still haven't heard back. Oh, I did send it through. Not sure why you haven't heard back. I'm like, yeah, same as a big hospital. I did the same. It's been a year and a half. Over a year. I still haven't heard back. So they're crap here, I'm sorry to say. I know the doctors are doing the best they can. And they're doing great work, yeah, but I just don't think they understand our bodies, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So I was speaking after the whole incident. I had a baby about 6 months later. I went to get my hair done at this other African lady, and she was saying she had the exact same situation, literally. Different hospitals, but she had the same thing happen to her where they told her you have. She's like, she just went to the hospital, same reason. They're like, oh, you have to take steroids, you have to do a surgery. But then when she took the steroids, obviously she didn't know, she wasn't sure.
Yeah.
She went by what they were telling her. She took the steroids, nothing happened. She didn't give birth. And then, but they didn't end up doing a C-section. She said her and her husband and family members went into deep prayers. Like, you know, I think for like a day or whatever hours, I was like, yeah. Yeah, they just, these doctors sometimes, but anyways, I guess to continue on, that went on, the next day came, they monitored me, I was fine, but then I went home, but before I went home, they gave me iron infusion, because I was low on iron, which was fine. That was something they told me as well later on in the night, and I said, I'm happy to do that one instead, because I didn't want to go against everything they told me. And I knew, I was like, my body was swollen, so I was probably short of something. And when I took the iron, everything went back to normal for me. So from 32 weeks, I actually didn't give birth until 37 weeks, which was amazing, because I could have given birth to a preemie baby just because someone thought it was okay to advise me of something that wasn't necessarily right. So in that sense, I'm really glad, like, you know, I said, I had the courage and boldness to sign up to the healthcare worker. But then the story just went downhill from there again after I gave birth. Sorry? Yeah, it was horrible. I gave birth, went in to the hospital at 2:20, gave birth at 2:40 a.m., and then the midwives who helped me, they weren't nice. Again, this is probably has nothing to do with being Black or minority. Some of them are just like that. I needed help opening my legs. No, just open it. This is me in labor trying to push. Like, I can't open my legs. Well, you need to open your legs for your baby to come out.
Wow.
And there are two of you. You think one of you can help me? Because everyone was standing there and doing other things. She wasn't on me. So she could have left what she was doing, but I'm sure, again, I like to justify things because I don't always want to think of things negative. I like to be as positive as possible. Yeah. One was actually putting her hand underneath my vagina to make sure the baby slides out okay if the baby comes out. The other was doing, I guess, other admin stuff, but she could have helped, I'm sure. But anyways, it happened eventually. I had no choice. After a while of you have to open your legs in the nicest way possible. I gave birth to a healthy baby, which was great. And then the main midwife, what she was supposed to do was to take blood work, because on my paperwork, because I had given birth so early, they didn't necessarily have enough time. Again, me trying to justify their incapabilities, I guess, inability to do the job, to be honest. They had a 20-minute window, so they didn't necessarily have enough time to go through my paperwork, but they did have me, do you have any health issues? I said I had thyroid. Mm-hmm. So what she was supposed to do, the midwife, was to take blood work of the baby right when the baby was born, for them, of the placenta, not the baby, the placenta, just to make sure everything is okay, nothing gets transferred to the baby, just so they know how to move on from there.
Yeah.
So that she didn't. Obviously, I'm not aware of this. I didn't have this with my first baby. And then I went on to the resting area to leave the next day. And then next day came, someone came in and said, before I was about to leave, they had told me, you're ready to go, all set up. My partner went, he even got a ticket because obviously things went south. He came to pick me up. And then when he came, parked somewhere, I would go back quickly, but then didn't end up going back. I'm so upset over that. they came in to say, oh yeah, it's time to go pack up. I did all that. And then a doctor came in, one of the doctors that was seeing me during the the pregnancy experience. She's an endocrine specialist. Mm-hmm. She came in and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, you cannot leave. Why? Oh, because we didn't do a test on your baby. So no one noticed this up until I was about to leave the hospital, literally waiting for a doctor to come in. I thought the doctor was coming in to say, congrats, you can go home. That was when she was supposed to come in, but she came in and said, sorry, you can't go home because someone forgot to do an important bit that, you know, they were supposed to on the placenta. And obviously because it's a placenta, it was no longer the placenta, they no longer had that. They had to do it on the baby, which would take longer for the result to come back. Yeah. And guess what that doctor, endocrine specialist, told me? I was shocked. She's like, I gave birth on a Tuesday morning, 2:40 a.m. She had said, we planned, me and the other doctors, because I was meeting about three or four of them. We're supposed to have a meeting today at 10 a.m. to plan your birthing experience, your birth. I thought this is supposed to be patient focused.
Yeah.
How would you meet and plan my birth when I'm not there?
Makes sense.
Because they were planning a C-section for me.
Yeah.
We're supposed to meet and plan your birth so we know how everything. I'm like, you are kidding me. And how can you say this out loud? Maybe it's a common routine for doctors, but I feel like it should in no way be that way, because I'm the mom, I'm the one pregnant. If you're gonna have a planning meeting to plan my experience, then let me in on it, right? Yeah. Oh, they're waking up. Sorry. Happy, yeah. Uh-huh. Are you okay? Okay, give me a hug. Had a good night? Okay. All right, go to your room. I'm always talking to someone. I'll be back soon. I'll give you petit déjeuner, okay? I'm talking to Erin she's from Chambra. She's saying hi, but you can't hear her.
Oh.
I'm talking about how I gave birth to you and Mujinga. It's exciting. All right, go in the room, okay? I'm coming. Don't bring Mujinga down, okay? Right when I finish, I'll come give you petit déjeuner. Oh, trust me, this is not good. Because I said, don't bring down your sister. I'm 90% sure she'll bring down her sister and will come in here. But I'll be quick.
Okay,
I know you've only asked one question.
No, it's good. Good.
And then the lady came in, and when she said that, I was at this point, I wasn't so furious. I was like, whatever. And then that was it. She's like, well, we have to keep you in longer and do blood work on you and do blood work on the baby. And what had happened, apparently, even after that, they're supposed to do the first on the feet. Sorry. On the feet, they're supposed to take the baby's blood on the feet. And then the midwife that came in, she did it on the baby, but it took forever. She kept poking the baby. This is like a day old baby, or at the stage 2 days old baby, just kept poking her in the wrong spots. Oh, we can't get blood, because she was poking her in the wrong spots. And then she left. Sorry,
she shouldn't be doing it. I would have been pissed off.
She should, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
And then she kept apologizing, and she went and then came back a few hours later. Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't take it all. I forgot to take one. You've been poking her the wrong way, and now you even forgot one of what you were supposed to do. Like, it was horrible. And then she did blood work on me and forgot to take something. I didn't find this out until 2 days later as well. They came back, they're like, yeah, we need to do another blood work because, yeah, that wasn't done. That was supposed to be done. It was just bad news, like something, story after story after story. But yeah, overall, though, they were okay, I guess. Yeah. I have to be positive, but it wasn't the best experience. But I'm assuming, obviously, I would never know because I had thyroid the second case, which they consider high risk. Mm-hmm. The first situation with a different hospital, I didn't have thyroid or any high risk situation. So the experience, it's bound to be different. But how different? Aside from the appointments that I had, which I thought were unnecessary, but again, protocol, they have to follow some sort of routine on their end. Fine. But the part where the midwife forgot to do the placenta, take the blood work of the baby, something that's mandatory, do my blood work, forgetting things. There was more to it. I made a whole video on this while I was at the hospital, but this is the like extremely important bit that I'm still upset about. Nothing. But yeah, then I guess they let me go home, which was great. And then I think I came home. Yeah, this was January. And then March, and in March, I wrote a complaint feedback till today. Almost ended in March. Yeah, a year later, I haven't heard from them. Yeah, that's how bad. I think the healthcare system needs to be a lot more friendly to maybe women. Again, I wouldn't know of other women because I don't have their experience, but I know as a minority woman, yeah, they need to be a lot more friendly. Like we said earlier, there should be research done on minorities, Black people, Aboriginals, just to see, to understand our body better. Because the other lady who had a similar experience who was told, take steroids, do C-section, she's like, yeah, I just feel they don't understand our body compared if you were in your country. Like, she's from Nigeria. The doctors there are aware, they've had different, various situations that they're able to cope with and understand. But here, no, they don't have it. And honestly, I feel like they have no interest. They will put in funds and say we're doing research.
Yeah.
They may include us, but then most of it would go into actually hiring, paying the staff member, I don't know, getting overpaid, whatever, thousands of dollars, and very little going into the individuals they're researching. But again, I don't know if that's the case. I don't want to believe that's the case, but I feel like there needs to be more done for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like there needs to be. And I just can't believe you all had the exact same experience. I've definitely heard of the pushing for a C-section, 100%. I've never heard of the steroids. I don't even know what that would be about.
Oh, I don't either. I don't even remember what they said it does. Whatever it did, it didn't make sense to me. So I refused it. Yeah, I'm like, why? Because to me, steroid means something bad.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why would you give someone who's pregnant steroids? Oh, I did ask, oh, it's kids, it's safe for pregnant women, da, da, da. Whatever it was. Oh, I think it was to help. So when the baby comes out, they're not infected, or something had to do with the baby, to help the baby when they do the C-section, for the baby to come out all healthy and be able to cope in this world, obviously, because they're still a preemie baby. I don't know. It didn't make sense, but I think they gave it to everyone who had a premature baby, maybe, or I don't know, but.
But it also sounds like they didn't even have a reason to give you a C-section. Like
they didn't. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't.
So is this in the public healthcare system or private?
Public. No, I don't have private health insurance. I was going to get one, but then you have to have had it at least 12 months prior. And obviously I found out I was pregnant like 3 months later. Yeah. So I couldn't get it. Sorry?
You also shouldn't have to have private when there is public health, in my opinion.
When there's public, yeah. And if they do things the right way, shouldn't have to be that way, unfortunately. I'm sure maybe the private system would be a lot different, maybe, maybe not. But what I notice here, though, the doctors that work in the public, they also work in the private.
Typically,
even with the GPs, they just alternate. They work here, they work there, they work in different hospitals, different medical centers. So I'm like, really, what difference does it make? Same person to me. It might be a bit nicer in the private, that's all.
Yeah. Now, I think what you've just said has definitely been running through my mind. So I've been trying to figure out where I'm going to give birth. I'm like, do I go back to the US where I know that I'm, you know, 3 to 4 times more likely to die if I birth with an OBGYN. But if I birth with a midwife, I'm better off. I have a better chance of surviving, and I'm more likely to come across a midwife that has worked on a Black body. Or do I stay in Australia, where I like to think that the stat is lower, but in reality, there is no stat because they haven't done the research.
There's no stats.
No, there's no stats. So I don't actually know if I am better off. And the other thing is, even if I do decide to work with midwives here, how many of them have actually worked with Black bodies? Our bodies are different. Like they are.
No, it's true. I agree. It's so unfortunate. There are no stats. I think the midwife would be great, to be honest.
Yeah.
For you to work with a midwife. But I didn't know the stats were so high in America if you actually go to a doctor.
Yeah, so it's,
you're 3 to 4 times more likely.
Yeah, we're 3 to 4 times more likely. The research doesn't say specifically doctor, but only 10% of births in the US are done with midwives. 90% are done with OBGYNs. So, but then also if you look at England, African English women are 5 times more likely to die, and their system is dominated by midwifery care as well.
You just never know. I guess when that time comes, just trust yourself, your guts, your feelings, and then see how it goes, because I think US would be good. It would understand you a lot better. You have people, sorry, give me a second. Yeah, don't count out loud. See, I'm talking, they can hear you. Okay, you can count inside your head, okay, and then you count out loud for me after when I finish. Okay, thank you. They're more experienced with I guess Black people or minorities, but here again, maybe it could be you could be lucky enough if you're to give birth here to meet a doctor who's worked, like who's from a developing country or from America. You never know, there could be a doctor from America who's working here and then who has adequate experience working with people from minority backgrounds, and then you're lucky enough and they help you out and you'll be fine, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, and Canberra, like you said, it's very diverse. You never know, if you do end up having your child there, I'm sure you'd be fine. All in all, really, I just say try stay be positive with whatever happens during your pregnancy or the whole birthing experience. It can be tough. Obviously women were some of us could be a bit more tense at that stage, but yeah, making the decision, I can imagine, would be tough for sure. But you see, you have your family back home, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the reasons I want to go back, because of my mom and my sister.
That's it, yeah.
And
yeah, it was really tough. Go ahead.
But the only thing about the US is we don't have the public health care system.
So I know, that's another thing.
Downfall.
You pay a fortune, don't you?
It's expensive. It's not cheap, especially if you decide to go with a midwife, you're paying even more, because most insurance companies don't like to cover midwives. Yeah, so it's really hard in the US. It's like, yeah, you know how to work with a Black body, I can get a midwife, but I'm going to be paying out of pocket. It's not going to be cheap.
Yeah.
Oh.
What if you have private health? Do they pay it off? Would they pay it off for you?
If you're paying for a really, really good private health, for sure. You're probably looking at more like $800, $900 a month, though.
Oh really?
Yeah,
US dollars.
Yeah, you need really, really good insurance. Like, I was lucky that my mom had really amazing insurance when my sister gave birth. My sister was still on her insurance, so like all of it was covered. But it was through her work. She worked for a hospital,
and yeah,
she worked for a really well-renowned hospital. She had amazing insurance.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not working at home, then it can be a bit difficult. Yeah, do you feel like if you hadn't had the other Black women giving you their experiences, it would have been harder for you to stand up for yourself in the hospital?
Oh, certainly. The other woman wasn't Black, she was Spanish, but yeah, definitely a minority. And it would have, because I wouldn't have known that you could challenge the system, for sure. I just thought naturally it's like, oh, whatever they say goes. But it's just the older I get, the more confident I am with myself and just with my beliefs and values. So if I was maybe 25, my old self, I certainly wouldn't question the whole situation. I would have just said, yes, this is what they said. Oh, and that's another thing. Yes, I had the mom advice. However, I strongly believe if it was my first, she was my second, so I'm a bit more experienced. But to be honest with you, if she was my first baby, I would have said yes in a heartbeat. When they came in and said, you need to do a C-section, you need to take steroids. Just because I was inexperienced, I'd get scared. Oh my goodness, what are they telling me? My child was fine, all of a sudden she's not fine. I need to do this, my baby needs to be okay. Yeah. So I think other things played into it as well. But I think the, for me though, the most important part was the fact that I had met that lady. We're still friends till today, even though she moved out of Adelaide. And just with, yeah, her words, her courage and boldness, I'm like, okay, yep, yeah, I'll do, you know, as she did. Because I didn't even know you could push it longer and say, no, I don't want to do this. I just thought they say something, you say, okay. But then she told me she did and it worked out. So I was like, why can't I, you know? And then I was really happy that when I needed them, I gave them a phone call. They picked up because it was like almost midnight. Imagine they hadn't picked up, I hadn't spoken to them, maybe I wouldn't have even been bold enough to make the decision I made, right? Yeah. So yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your story, and I'm sorry that you had this experience as well, but I'm really glad that you were able to stand up for yourself and not go into a C-section that was not necessary. You shouldn't have to do this.
I know.
It should be, mm-hmm. like, there should have been an understanding and support for you either way. You shouldn't have had to go through all this just to get respect for you and your baby.
That's it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your
story. I agree.
If people want to find you and reach out to you, where can they reach out to you?
Oh, my name is Etel. You can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook as Etel Diessa. So Etheldiessa. Etel Diessa. That's my handle on the various platforms.
Well, thank you so much, Etel, and it was amazing being able to catch up finally and actually talk about all of our
different. I know. Well, thank you.
We want to thank Etel so much for allowing us to interview her and come on. It has been an absolute honor. And if you are interested in reaching out to Etel, you can find her at Etheldiessa on Instagram. And it was such an honor. And if any of you all want to come on the Onus podcast, feel free to reach out to us at hello@theonuscollaborative.com. And if you're a provider looking to come on the podcast, feel free to sign up on our free directory and we will get you all set up. All right, well, we'll see you all next week. Bye.